Hi, everyone. Welcome to Kids Like You and Me. It's a special Pea Green Boat feature that focuses on young people dealing courageously with challenges they face. Challenges like diabetes, Williams syndrome, and autism. Today's show will be a little different. We'll hear from two high school students, Betta and Harry, who are in a school club called HOSA, Health Occupation Students of America. One project these two took on this past fall was helping young children who have a relative with Alzheimer's. They decided, wait a minute, what's Alzheimer's? Well, according to the Alzheimer's Association literature, it's a disease of older people that destroys brain cells. It affects a person's ability to remember and think and make sense of the world. People with Alzheimer's will forget things, repeat themselves, and after a while, they may not be able to do easy tasks like eating or dressing. This can be confusing to a child. So Betta and Harry decided they'd help by producing a podcast to educate kids about Alzheimer's. Some of the piece was recorded here at the Montana Public Radio Studios, and one interview the students recorded themselves at the high school. I'm happy to share their work with you today.
Hi, I'm Harry.
And I'm Betta.
We're students at Big Sky High School, and we're working on a podcast to teach young people about Alzheimer's disease. We're in a club called HOSA, which means Health Occupation Students of America. We're interested in health careers, and I've worked with the Montana Alzheimer's Association, and now we're here with Annie on the Pea Green Boat. We have some information about Alzheimer's for you, and because many kids have relatives or neighbors with Alzheimer's, we're including some stories about kids living with people with Alzheimer's. We even have an interview with a child whose great-grandma has Alzheimer's. Let's start with Betta explaining a little bit more about Alzheimer's.
For you kids who don't know much about Alzheimer's, it's a disease people can get when they're much older than you. What happens is that in your brain, you have these things called neurons, and neurons are like little bridges from one side of your brain to the other. That's how messages and information get across the brain. Sometimes when we get older, things called plaques get tangled and form in these neurons. You can think of these plaques as the troll under the bridge. When the information tries to cross from one side of the brain to the other, the troll, or the plaque, stops the information from getting across. So what happens then? People start forgetting things. Unfortunately, right now there is no cure for Alzheimer's. Doctors have been working really hard to find a cure. They have some medicines that can make it not as bad or slow its development, but usually Alzheimer's gets worse and worse, and people will start forgetting more and more. Eventually, though, these doctors will find a cure, and that will be great.
I hope that explains a little about Alzheimer's. Now, let's listen to a story about a boy who makes friends with some neighbors.
This is a book called Wilfred Gordon MacDonald Partridge, written by Mem Fox and illustrated by Julie Vivas. There was once a small boy called Wilfred Gordon MacDonald Partridge, and what's more, he wasn't very old either. His house was next door to an old people's home, and he knew all the old people who lived there. He liked Miss Jordan, who played the organ. He listened to Mr. Hosking, who told him scary stories. He played with Mr. Tippett, who was crazy about cricket. He ran errands for Miss Mitchell, who walked with a wooden stick. He admired Mr. Drisdale, who had a voice like a giant. And here in the book, you can see Miss Jordan, who's hunched over the organ. There's Mr. Hosking, who has his arms up, and he's telling a scary story. There's Mr. Tippett, who's carrying around a broom like a cricket bat. There's Miss Mitchell, who's walking with a big cane, and Mr. Drisdale, who's really tall, like a giant. But his favorite person of all was Miss Nancy Allison Delacour Cooper, because she had four names just as he did. He called her Miss Nancy, and he told her all his secrets. One day, Wilfred Gordon heard his mother and father talking about Miss Nancy. "Poor old thing," said his mother. "Why is she a poor old thing?" asked Wilfred Gordon. "Because she's lost her memory," said his father. "It isn't surprising," said his mother. "After all, she is 96. "What's a memory?" asked Wilfred Gordon. He was always asking questions. "It is something you remember," said his father. But Wilfred Gordon wanted to know more, so he called on Miss Jordan, who played the organ. "What's a memory?" he asked. "Something warm, my child, something warm." and there he is talking to Miss Jordan, who's drinking out of a warm bowl of soup. He called on Mr. Hosking, who told him scary stories. "What's a memory?" he asked. "Something from long ago, me lad, something from long ago." He called on Mr. Tippett, who was crazy about cricket. "What's a memory?" he asked. "Something that makes you cry, my boy, something that makes you cry." He called on Miss Mitchell, who walked with a wooden stick. "What's a memory?" he asked. "Something that makes you laugh, my darling, something that makes you laugh." He called on Mr. Drisdale, who had a voice like a giant. "What's a memory?" he asked. "Something as precious as gold, young man, something as precious as gold." And there he is talking to Mr. Drisdale, and he barely comes up to his knee. So Wilfred Gordon went home again to look for memories for Miss Nancy, because she had lost her own. He looked for the shoebox of shells he had found long ago last summer, and put them gently in a basket. He found the puppet on strings, which always made everyone laugh, and he put that in the basket too. He remembered with sadness the medal which his grandfather had given him, and he placed it gently next to the shells. Next, he found his football, which was as precious as gold, and last of all, on his way to Miss Nancy's, he went into the hen house and found a fresh, warm egg from under a hen. And here is Wilfred Gordon with his basket full of memories for Miss Nancy. And he's got an egg, and a puppet, and a football, and some shells, and a medal. Then Wilfred Gordon called on Miss Nancy and gave her each thing one by one. "What a dear, strange child to bring me all these wonderful things," thought Miss Nancy. Then she started to remember. She held the warm egg and told Wilfred Gordon about the tiny speckled blue eggs she had once found in a bird's nest in her aunt's garden. She put a shell to her ear and remembered going to the beach by tram long ago and how hot she had felt in her button-up boots. And here's a picture of young Miss Nancy, who's taken off her boots on the beach, and she's jumping around. She touched the medal and talked sadly of the big brother she had loved, who had gone to war and never returned. She smiled at the puppet on strings, and she remembered the one she had shown to her sister, and how she had laughed with a mouth full of porridge. She bounced the football to Wilfred Gordon, and remembered the day she had met him, and all the secrets they had told. And the two of them smiled and smiled, because Miss Nancy's memory had been found again by a small boy who wasn't very old either. And here they are at the end, and Nancy is reaching over to give Wilfred Gordon a hug.
Next, we'll hear a conversation between Betta and 6-year-old Carla.
Carly, do you want to tell us how old you are?
I am 6 3/4.
All right. Carly, what did you think of the book?
It was good.
Yeah? Have you ever shown your grandmother things to help her remember things before? No? What did you notice the little boy in the book? What did he do to help this old woman find
a
memory?
He gave her some shells and a baseball and a pan, a metal pan, and a puppet.
Yeah. And how do you think those things helped her remember? Did they remind her of things she used to remember?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, your great-grandma, does she forget things sometimes?
Yeah.
Yeah? What kinds of things?
Like how old I am and what grade I'm in. And what school I go to.
Yeah. And how does that make you feel?
I don't know.
Do you know how your family feels about it?
Well, I know how my brother feels because after she says it 2 times, he says, "You've already said that."
Ah. How old's your brother?
4.
4. Oh, so he's a little bit younger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you like to help your grandma at all? Yeah?
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things do you do to help your great grandma? You go visit.
Mm-hmm.
You go visit her.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bet that makes her happy to see you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you've given her your picture.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What do you do usually when you go visit your great grandma?
Our daddy usually takes us. And they talk, and Mitchell and I, like,
sit in her walker.
Yeah.
Fights with the walker.
That was kind of fun.
Thanks for listening to our presentation on Alzheimer's. We hope it's been helpful.
And we're excited to think about future careers in the health field.
Thanks to Betta and Harry for their ideas and work on the Alzheimer's Project. In Betta's interview with Carla, you can hear that that six-year-old is a part of the whole family's engagement with her great-grandma. I spoke recently with Dr. Dick Blank, a retired physician in Missoula. He also emphasized the importance of family togetherness when caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's. He speaks from experience. He took care of his wife on what he calls her Alzheimer's journey. It was a journey for his whole family, him and his wife, their grown-up children, and their grandkids. Love is the bond, he said, that kept everyone going.
One of the basic statements that we based our entire journey together is that we as a family needed to remember the person their grandmother was in our case, and love the person they are. I think that love is the most important bond in this thing. Because we kept our love for each other and our love, our shared love for my wife and their grandmother and my and our kids' mother intact throughout the entire journey, it made it easier for all of us. Mm-hmm. And we supported each other through love.
We all know the kids see a lot. There's no pretending that everything is fine with a loved one with Alzheimer's. There are signs that we all will notice.
When a friend or family member has dementia, you may feel upset, confused, or scared. And it can be hard to understand. It's hard for everyone to understand, including adults, because the person who has dementia may look the same. They just act different than they used to. Some people may forget your name, they forget who you are, and then a half hour later may remember who you are. So that's all part of it. And as time goes on, things will definitely will get worse. Some people may cry or get angry, as we said, and they may even embarrass you. And that's one of the things that's hard if you're going to go out in public. You have to be prepared for that. They may not remember who you are, even if this is your grandma or grandpa who did remember who you are, and that may change. And it's not because they're trying to forget who you are. They're not trying to do this. It's because their brain is damaged and they've lost the parts of the brain that used to allow them to do that. They can't make sense of what's happening, and sometimes neither can you. And we have to remember that as they went on, and they can't control it. They may ask the same question over and over, and the best thing is just to answer it over and over.
Dr. Blank explained that dementia is an umbrella term covering the many symptoms of serious mental decline in an older person. Alzheimer's is just the most common form of dementia. Dr. Blank is involved with many Alzheimer's organizations and works to help families cope.
I have been on the board of the State Alzheimer's Association. I have served with a group that wrote a state plan as how to deal with dementia and Alzheimer's statewide. I'm part of a local group here in Missoula that's trying to create a dementia-friendly Missoula, and I volunteer at Missoula Aging Services as a resource person to talk to people whose family members have dementia.
So grown-ups have ways to handle the stress of being caregivers. For example, they can go to aging services in their cities for help, or they can join a support group. But with kids, it's different. When someone close to them is changing in confusing ways, children and teens may exhibit their emotions in ways we grown-ups might miss. They may begin to act out at school, do poorly in their studies, or stop having friends over.
There can be many things happen because if the child is upset, they may express that by having an upset stomach, by having a headache, by maybe being a little agitated and scared themselves. One of my main messages, if I say nothing else, is that you have to explain to children what is going on. I think that they're smart enough to understand that, and I think that helps them. Bringing the subject up and opening a conversation. One of the things that we did was we were very open with the grandkids, and we involved them not in big groups, but sometimes one at a time, talking to their grandmother, and then talking to them about what they'd seen, how they felt, mm-hmm. and then trying to explain it on the basis that the grandma's or grandpa's brain is really damaged and they can't help themselves.
Kids need to know that a loved one with Alzheimer's is not acting anxious or forgetful because that person doesn't care about them anymore. Honest and open conversation is a way to do that, but how to get started? Many resources are available for kids and their grown-ups. The Alzheimer's Association website has helpful information. Libraries have books, like the one Betta read earlier. Online videos like What My Grandma Means to Say can be helpful, too, in starting conversations. For grown-ups, the Missoula Public Library is starting a monthly program called The Memory Cafe, featuring special presentations for people experiencing memory loss and their caregivers. Likewise, the Missoula Art Museum in April started a program called Art in the Moment, which will have special art viewings and projects for people with dementia and their caregivers. Similar programs are available in other cities, too. Families now can find lots of help. Finally, Dr. Blank has these last words of advice for families with a loved one with Alzheimer's.
Those of you who will become and are caregivers, remember that you're going to be better if you take care of the caregiver during the process. I think the kids are definitely part of that process. And yes, they're caregivers too. And I think that's what we need to remember. Mm-hmm. This involves everyone.
Thanks to Betta and Harry, young Carla and her mom, and Dr. Dick Blank for their participation in this. And a special thanks to Marge Doyle, who spearheaded the high school project and who continues to work to increase the awareness and understanding of Alzheimer's. We'll close today's feature with Betta's reading of another moving story available at the public library about a young boy and his grandpa.
Hi, this is Betta again with the Alzheimer's Project. Now I'm reading a story called The Memory Box by Mary Barr, illustrated by David Cunningham. When I woke up this morning, I knew it was going to be a great vacation. Gramps was standing by my bed, holding the tackle box. Already too hot for catching walleye, he said. I bet Zach would like to throw out a line anyway, this being his first day, Graham argued from the doorway. She was holding a plateful of butter-dripping cinnamon rolls. As I said, it was going to be a great vacation. 3 weeks of fishing Gramps Lake and eating Graham's cooking. Now from the boat, I could see Graham waving at us, fishermen from the dock on the sky blue lake. Behind her, on the hillside, sat their berry red house in the middle of the dark green northern woods. The colors reminded me of a painting I saw once. Gramps and I rested our bamboo poles on the side of the boat. Our bobbers rode the glittery waves. It's a memory box day, Gramps said as we waited for the perch to decide if they were hungry. What's a memory box? I asked, dangling my hands in the cool water. I wondered if fish ever nibbled fingers. Remind me to tell you after the fish fry we're going to have tonight. Now, let's get quiet and catch 'em. And we did. We got so quiet I could hear the fish circling our night crawlers. But it still took 3 hours of sweaty, itchy stillness before we hauled in enough to fill Graham's skillet. Don't forget the cook's rule, Graham said as we unloaded our catch. We always cleaned ourselves and the fish in the lakeside shed. But every summer, Graham reminded us anyway. Nothing but good smells at my dinner table, she'd say, pushing us back out if we tried to sneak in without washing first. In the shed, for the first time ever, Gramps handed me the long fillet knife, the knife that's about 100 years old, the one that I hope will be mine someday. "I think you're old enough to handle the blade," he said, "and to hear the true tale of the cook's rule." He guided my fingers as I gutted my fish. That first time I caught fish for Graham to cook, I brought them into the kitchen to clean. I don't think she was prepared for fish eyes staring back at her out of the sink. She screamed so loud I dropped the frying pan and broke my toe. After that, the fish and I went to the shed. We laughed. Everybody knew Gramps usually made up most of his true tales. After dinner, we dragged our fish-full bellies to the porch to watch the sun slip into the lake. Crickets fiddled and owls hooted, but the rest of the world was quiet. All except Graham and Gramps and me, in our rickety rockers on the wooden porch. Gramps was settling in, getting ready for another true tale. He's a great storyteller. Graham thinks so, I know, because she always puts down her cross stitch when he begins. "It was your great Graham who told me about the memory box," Gramps said, staring at the sunset sky. "It's a special box that stores family tales and traditions. An old person and a young person fill the box together. Then they store it in a place of honor. No matter what happens to the old person, the memories are saved forever." "What do you mean, no matter what happens?" I asked Gramps. I didn't like his story much. The sun practically disappeared before Gramps answered. "Do you know that this old body just flunked a physical exam for the first time?" Graham stopped rocking. "This old person must make his memory box," Gramps said after a long silence. He stopped rocking too, and looked me square in the eye. "Is this young person ready?" "I guess, sure." The words stuck in my mouth, like caramel from a Halloween apple. Graham disappeared into the house and made a pot and pan racket. "Zach, the door, please," she called through the screen. "I emptied an old recipe box so we can start our memory box," she said, handing me a treasure chest a pirate would love. "Now I'll leave my men alone." My fingers traced the designs carved into the smooth, shiny wood. "I gave that to your grandmother on our wedding day," was all Gramps said. Then we sat in the dark and watched the fireflies dart past the porch. Maybe Gramps was already searching his mind for memories to put in the box. He never said. But for the rest of my vacation, we remembered, Gramps and Graham and me. We especially remembered when we were fishing. "Thoughts come faster when bobbers are jumping," Graham said as she wrote our memories on paper scraps. "How about the time I climbed the water tower?" I asked Gramps. "Mom said no, but you turned your back so I could make it to the top." "You nearly fell off, as I recall." He scratched the whiskers that appeared on his face for the first summer ever. I wondered about those whiskers. Didn't Gramps tell me once how much Graham hated it when he didn't shave? "How about the time I laid my freshly picked blueberries on the porch to sun dry?" Graham remembered. "Zach came in from his swim and swished a path right through those juicy berries." "Looked like an old blue rug to me," I said, remembering how Graham's face had turned red and my feet had turned blue at the same time. It was Gramps' job to add photos and souvenirs to the memory box. He found a picture of my second birthday party when I had taken a bite off the top of the cake. There was a shot of Graham in her wedding dress with flowers in her hair, and one of Dad in his football uniform when he still had hair. And another was of Gramps and Mom the day he had taught her to ride a bike. She had ridden it, too, right over his foot. We added other important stuff, like my first soccer medal and Graham's chocolate chip cookie recipe. We added new memories, too. We wrote about the morning the three of us rolled green apples down the hill for a herd of deer that rested in the long grass. And the time we watched a raccoon bandit watch us as she ate a trayful of cookies that Graham had set to cool on the picnic table. And a picture of the trophy walleye I caught the morning we put the boat on the lake before the sun even got up. As the days passed, I noticed something different about Gramps. A major, small change, if you know what I mean. One afternoon, I saw him sitting in the swing that hung between the two giant pines. I headed on over. But as I stopped, I heard him talking to someone else. Gramps was telling Francie how to reel in a northern pike that was fighting her hook. He was talking to her as if she were right there. But nobody was, especially not Francie. She's my mom. and one afternoon, we hiked to find nature stuff I could take back to school. Gramps wandered off the trail into a patch of poison ivy, as if he didn't even see it. I yelled until he stopped, but he wouldn't come back. I had to go get him and take him by the hand. That day, it seemed like his body walked with me, but his thoughts strolled somewhere else. None of it made sense until the morning Gramps shook me awake. "Get dressed, Zach. Help me find Gramps. He's been gone too long." "Probably just fishing." I stared at Gram as if she were a crazy lady. "But he forgot his shoes." She looked back at me as if I were the crazy one. "Check the shed. Whistle if you find him first." I ran toward the lake, even faster when I saw the shed door swinging. But Gramps wasn't inside. Outside again, I stopped to listen, the way hunters do. I thought I heard noises out back, so I circled the woods around the shed. When I found Gramps, I whistled loud. He was sitting on the ground like a scout in front of a campfire. His feet were bare and one was bleeding. "Forgot my shoes." He tried to hide his face. It was shiny with tears. Gram moved to the fastest I'd ever seen. She sat on the ground beside Gramps while I ran back for his slippers. We helped him back to the house. Led him, if you want to know the truth. When we bandaged his foot and made him lie down on the bed, Gramps was quiet. We waited until the snoring began before Graham and I tiptoed out of the room. "Remember that first memory box night?" Graham asked. She sat in the kitchen. "Gramps was trying to tell you about Alzheimer's disease, when the body stays but the mind leaves." She stared off, and I just waited until she looked at me again. "The mind doesn't go all at once or all the time, but it never comes back quite the same way. When Dr. Johnson suggested Gramps might have Alzheimer's, it explained so many things about this past year. Gramps forgetting to shave, his talking to me like we were kids again, his getting lost on trails he'd hiked for years. I thought about the poison ivy patch and Francie's fishing lesson. It scares Gramps, knowing he'll forget. That's why the memory box is so important. When Gramps woke up, he called me. I stood at his bedroom door. He sat on the bed. "Did Graham tell you about this useless old man, and how he needs to find a home for his special things?" He handed me the old fishing knife from the shed. I forgot the sheath, so I went back, and got lost. "Thanks," I whispered, holding my knife the way Gramps had taught me. My own very first knife. I had always wanted one. This one. But now it didn't seem so important. "Your mom's going to hurt," Gramps said. "When it gets bad, bring out our memory box. Show her what I remember." I hugged Gramps. We both felt better. The rest of my vacation bolted like a fawn when you try to sneak too close. The next day, Dad and Mom came to take me back for school, and we had such a great barbecue that we decided it should be part of the memory box. I could tell Dad already knew about Gramps, because he shot a zillion photos of Gramps and Graham. When it was time to leave, Gramps squeezed me hard. Graham squeezed me soft. "Add things to the memory box you want Gramps to remember," she whispered as she handed it to me. "And bring it with you next summer. We'll need it, you and I." I waved as our car drove away, away from the best and worst summer ever. This time, Gramps and Graham had taken care of me. Next summer, Graham and I would take care of Gramps. And the summers after that, well, we'd figure out something. As the car hit the top of the hill, I watched Gramps slowly disappear into the horizon. And I hugged my memory box. Thanks for listening. This was The Memory Box by Mary Barr, illustrated by David Cunningham.
Kids Like You and Me is produced by Annie Gard at the studios of Montana Public Radio. Beth Ann Austin is the engineer and tech genius. Financial support comes from the Rural Institute at the University of Montana. Thanks for listening.